This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. As always, go check out reallifepharmacology.com. Get your free 31-page PDF. You get that for subscribing via email. I've also got access to some nursing pharmacology questions that I've thrown together as well. Absolutely free to you too. So again, go check that out at reallifepharmacology.com. All right, let's get into the drug of the day today, and that is fosinopril. This medication, as you can maybe tell by the ending, is an ACE inhibitor. Now, if you remember what ACE stands for, it's angiotensin-converting enzyme. Ultimately, by blocking this enzyme with an ACE inhibitor like fosinopril, we can prevent the formation of angiotensin II. Angiotensin II is a potent vasoconstrictor. So reducing angiotensin II ultimately leads to lower blood pressure, which is indeed what fosinopril, or brand name Monopril, is used for. So usages, hypertension. Usual dosage range I've seen in practice is 10 to 40 milligrams. I've probably seen 10 and 20 milligrams most commonly, but can go up to 40. Package insert does allow up to 80 milligrams per day. I can't say I've seen that very often in practice, but it is something to consider in patients maybe where we don't have other alternative blood pressure medications that we can use. Maybe you'd consider pushing the dose as long as they were tolerating it there. And then heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, it is approved for that as well. And we're going to try to target higher doses if we can, specifically up to 40 milligrams. Generally, we don't go up to 80 milligrams for the target dose of heart failure, just because I don't believe that has been studied, if that's correct in my recollection. So heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, we do want to target 40 milligrams if possible. But of course, you've got to keep in mind adverse drug reactions. The higher we go, the more likely that is to occur. And certainly blood pressure is going to be something we're going to watch closely. In my geriatric patient population, pushing ACE inhibitors or ARNI, for example, sacubitril valsartan, that can lead to some significant hypotension and the increased risk for falls. So it's something we definitely got to proceed cautiously, I think, with that taper up on blood pressure lowering medications. But we do want to try to get to that target dose as long as they're tolerating it and not getting too dizzy. Dosage forms, there's 10, 20, and 40 milligram tablets. There is a combination, I believe, with hydrochlorothiazide as well. And then adverse drug reactions. So I alluded to the blood pressure thing. If we're using it for heart failure, we've got to watch blood pressure closely, make sure we're not dipping too low. And then obviously if you're using it for hypertension, the goal is to get the blood pressure down, but certainly we could run the risk of getting it down too far if patients lose weight, implement lifestyle changes, add on other medications. It could dip a little bit too far in some cases. All right, so other adverse effects. So ACE inhibitors, chronic cough. You've got to remember that. I've seen it overlooked numerous times in practice where a patient presents. They're like, yeah, I've kind of had this nagging cough for a month or two. I just can't seem to get rid of it. I feel fine otherwise, generally. It is a not gunky cough, for lack of a better term there. Patients typically aren't coughing up phlegm or any sort of stuff like that. So it is a dry cough, whereas, you know, gunkier type of cough is typically associated with some type of bacterial or potentially viral infection. What I look for is if I see patients that are taking chronic cough medicines, Those type of patients immediately signal a red flag to me to look at their medication list and make sure they're not taking an ACE inhibitor. Or if they come to you asking for cough medicine and you've seen them ask for it a couple times recently, that's probably a good indication that they've got some chronic cough issues going on. And you definitely should ask them and take a look about their medication list. All right, other adverse effects, hyperkalemia. So talking about potassium levels, getting up above 5, 5.5 or higher, that can certainly be a risk with fosinopril. There are a bunch of risk factors associated with that as well, and certainly other medications, which I'll talk about in the drug interaction section. But also patients with CKD, for example, they're going to be at greater risk for hyperkalemia. Generally, you're going to see those increases in potassium levels within the first week or two, but it doesn't always have to be that way. So we kind of continually monitor that over time. Angioedema is a risk. That's going to generally show up upon initiation and or increase. So again, usually within the first, 1 to 2 weeks of therapy, but there certainly have been reports of it occurring later on as well. Again, less common that it's just going to show up when a patient's been on the med for 3 years versus when they're just starting. It's going to be much, much more common. Pregnancy. Absolutely have to know this warning. If you've got a patient, younger patient taking this type of medication and they become pregnant, it is a huge risk for to the fetus, and obviously a risk of death for the fetus as well. So really, really important, and it's why you really don't see ACE inhibitors used in younger female patients in general, but really, really important thing to remember, because I've certainly seen it come up in pharmacology and board exams throughout my career without a doubt. So good one to remember there. Drop in blood pressure, I alluded to previously. Not going to talk much more about that. Okay, kinetics. I want to talk a little bit about pharmacokinetics and potentially genetics here. So first off, with pharmacokinetics, it is actually hydrolyzed to an active metabolite called fosinoprilate, so basically an AT at the end of the medication there. And it's not done by CYP enzymes or anything like that, so we don't really need to worry, stress about that too much. Probably the biggest thing you need to pay attention to is it's eliminated in the feces and in the urine. So patients with really poor renal function, which is probably going to be a risk for acute renal failure as well, and something we'd want to monitor closely if we started this medication in somebody with kind of the borderline poor renal function. But it's important to pay attention to renal function, because this drug is also eliminated partially, at least through the urine as well, or the active metabolite is, maybe I should say. So pay attention to that. Genetics patients, black patients, may be at risk of non-response to ACE inhibitors in general. So if we're using it for blood pressure, a black patient may not respond as well as other patients. And then fosinopril, just for what it's worth, I don't think it really plays a clinically relevant role in the management of blood pressure or heart failure, but it is much more lipophilic, so you may get greater central nervous system penetration with fosinopril compared to probably the most commonly used ACE inhibitor, which is lisinopril. Monitoring parameters are going to be important with fosinopril. There is a risk that it can cause acute renal failure, and there's some medications that can increase that risk that I'll talk about in drug interactions. But we need to monitor that renal function. And in general, I've seen the percentages thrown around a 20 to 30% increase in creatinine may be indicative of the drug causing acute renal failure or causing, that worsening kidney function. So that's important to remember, and that's probably a situation where you're going to stop the drug and use something else if it goes above 20. Maybe even 30% is probably the most common cutoff line I've heard of as far as that rise in creatinine. So if you get a patient going from they got a creatinine of 1, you start fosinopril, and they go up to 1.5, that's probably pretty concerning regarding the use of fosinopril. Obviously, you're going to look at that patient and see what else is going on besides starting that medication and make sure that there's nothing medical or anything else going on. But that is definitely something you need to look at if you see an increase like that. That would be an example of a 50% increase there. So pay attention to that renal function. If it gets worse as you start or increase the dose of fosinopril, definitely pay attention to that. And then, of course, potassium, we're going to monitor. I mentioned hyperkalemia risk, and then, of course, blood pressure as well. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor, and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're a pharmacist in the market for pharmacist board certification study material like NAPLEX, ambulatory care, BCPS, BCMTMS, or the geriatric exam, go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. We've got a great list of resources there that can certainly help you pass your exam and get ready for it as well. So go check that out. Support the sponsor. If you're a med student, nursing student, nurse practitioner, any other healthcare professional that has to work with medications and learn pharmacology, go check out meded101.com/store. We've got tons of different books, resources, drug interactions, case studies, so on and so forth. So go check that out. Support the sponsor, meded101.com. All right, wrapping up with drug interactions. So first and foremost, I do want to mention ARBs. I have been asked that question, and I have seen it come up in clinical practice. So ARBs, a drug like valsartan, for example, they should not be used with an ACE inhibitor like fosinopril. Okay, there's increased risk for adverse effects like hyperkalemia and acute renal failure. So, and angioedema, so don't use those together. In addition to that, we've got numerous other medications that can raise potassium levels. Trimethoprim, spironolactone, heparin, calcineurin inhibitors. These can all exacerbate the elevation in potassium that is caused by fosinopril. So at a minimum, if you're adding on these drugs to a patient taking fosinopril, you definitely need to monitor potassium levels. If they're already borderline having elevated potassium, that might be an individual where we look to do alternative medications versus some of the ones that I mentioned there previously. Other drug interactions you need to be aware of, kind of additive effects here again, is NSAIDs and diuretics. Those can increase the risk for acute renal failure. And when added on top of fosinopril, that can kind of double that risk, so to speak, there. In addition to the drug interaction risk, there are some risk factors for that acute renal failure that I forgot to mention previously. So elderly patients, that's right in my wheelhouse, they're going to certainly be more at risk for acute renal failure due to fosinopril in combination with some of these other medications. Patients with renal artery stenosis, patients with heart failure, maybe hypotension or lower volume status where they're at risk for dehydration potentially. Certainly elevation in dose, and then obviously any pre-existing renal disease as well will increase that risk of that interaction causing acute renal failure. And then last but not least, I did want to mention blood pressure medications. So it's probably a no-brainer that amlodipine or hydrochlorothiazide is going to exacerbate the low blood pressure effect of fosinopril. But some of the other drugs, PDE5 inhibitors like sildenafil, for example, Parkinson's disease medications, some of the antipsychotics, for example, may have some blood pressure lowering effects. These are all meds that could potentially add on to that blood pressure lowering effect, and obviously is something that we're just going to typically monitor for, and it's not going to be a direct contraindication. All right, well, I think that wraps up the podcast for today. Hopefully you picked up some clinical practice pearls. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating, review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Share us with friends, colleagues, listservs, wherever you find your healthcare professional friends and discuss medication-related topics with them. Feel free to share this podcast. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. And of course, go check out the library of books and courses at meded101.com/store. We've got more and more resources there as we go along and as you request things, which I've certainly gotten over time. And if you have a request, comment, concern about anything, feel free to drop me an email, mededucation101@gmail.com. I'm certainly not perfect. I don't get everything right all the time. And I appreciate your comments to help make me a better practicing pharmacist, which I love doing. So with that said, you can also track me down on LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. And I am going to sign off for today. Thanks again.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.